We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. Back in mid-June, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn signed legislation that will link promotion of teachers to student performance. Now, supporters of this new law say that will also make it easier to get rid of teachers who are doing a poor job. In signing that law, the governor said these reforms will help us make sure students across Illinois learn from the best teachers. In this hour of Focus, we will be talking about education reform here in the state of Illinois. We'll talk in some detail about this legislation known as Senate Bill 7. And our guest for the program is Chris Rogge. He is the executive director of the Council on Teacher Education. He is also adjunct assistant professor of education policy, organization, and leadership at the University of Illinois. And we're pleased that he could be here in the studio with us to talk. As we talk, as always, questions are welcome. Now, we hope people will be on target with their questions and try to be brief. That way we can accommodate as many different callers as possible. But calls are welcome. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, anywhere you can hear us, 800-222-9455. You may also email will-talk@illinois.edu. So at any point here, you had questions for us, you can call. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, David. I'm glad to be here.
So just we'll do the headlines here first. What we're talking about here, the legislation we're talking about, is was known as Senate Bill 7. It passed unanimously in the Illinois Senate, cleared the House on a vote of 112-1. And the governor signed this in mid-June. We can get into some detail here, but I suppose, again, here the headline. Well, what's significant is this headline that says that now decisions about tenure, about retention, about layoffs are all tied to the teacher's performance as, I suppose, measured by the student's performance, right?
Well, that's certainly the most talked about aspect of the bill, although it does cover several different aspects of negotiations, bargaining, the granting of tenure, dismissal of teachers. But the key feature is that, and this has been discussed now nationally in the education circles for a number of years, the notion of tying teacher evaluation and teacher performance to student performance. There are many questions that still remain about that, and we can get into some of those. But one of the things that made this bill such a headliner was that, and if you read the article in the Tribune that came out shortly after the governor signed the bill, it was entitled Illinois, a New Leader in Education Reform. Mm-hmm. And the difference between this bill and others in other states was that it was an effort that involved several of the different stakeholders. The two major teachers' unions in the state of Illinois were involved in the negotiating process, the Chicago Teachers Union. So the feeling is that this bill represents, instead of a one-sided dictum, that it represents a true collaboration.
That seems to me to be very important, particularly if you look at the experiences in other states where there's been a lot of conflict around these same issues, particularly about teachers' rights to bargain and mm-hmm. to strike. And this, it did indeed seem to be, this was the result of cooperation between all of the interested parties, between lawmakers, between the teachers' unions, between groups that are trying to promote education reform, whatever they consider that to be. So this really, this, for that reason, you would say this was something that was important?
Well, it certainly was different and even historic because of that, I think. Now, not every side got everything they wanted, mm-hmm. obviously, but the fact that the sides were able to reach an agreement, sort of a compromise, the unions felt that there was satisfactory protections given to teachers. Obviously, the reform groups, from what I've read about their response to this legislation, were ecstatic about the somewhat tighter controls placed on the evaluation of teacher performance, some more specific kinds of measures that will be used to evaluate teacher performance. And all sides appear to be fairly happy right now. Now, the Chicago Teachers Union did back away from it a little bit when the bill was in its final stages of negotiation. There were a few aspects that that caused them to withdraw their complete support. But by and large, there seems to be at this point, and it needs to be pointed out that we're very early in the whole process. The devil is in the details. There are many, many parts of this that need to be worked out, procedures, specifics of how this is all going to play out when it's actually put into place. But at the moment, there appears to be a fair degree of agreement and satisfaction with it. Mm-hmm.
One of the big unresolved questions here, though, it seems, that is how it is that teacher performance will be evaluated. It's my understanding that we really actually don't have a system in place to do this.
Well, there's not been a uniform system of evaluating teachers. That has been traditionally left up to districts to decide and schools how teachers will be evaluated. And part of the data that were used to justify the law showed that 97-98% of teachers receive an excellent or superior, whatever the highest rating is, during routine teacher evaluations. So what Senate Bill 7 does, and this, it also connects back, a key piece of this is the Performance Evaluation Reform Act of 2010. I don't think I said that right. Yes, I did. Performance Evaluation Reform Act of 2010, which established four categories of teacher evaluation: excellent, proficient, needs improvement, and unsatisfactory. And what that act did was to mandate that these will be the indicators that are used in all teacher evaluations across the state.
Here's something that I'm a little confused about, or at least I wanted to make sure that I understood. And when you talk about teacher evaluation, there, it seems to me that broadly speaking, there are two things that you can look at. You can look at the teachers, you can look at the students. So you can look at students and their performance, the measured, however you want to measure, standardized tests or whatever. And then I suppose you could look at the teachers, and you could have some kind of way of looking at their performance in the classroom.
Yes.
And trying to decide, you know, is this a good teacher or not? And so you could do one or the other, or probably you should do some combination of those two. I mean, is that what really are we talking about? Is the performance of the teacher paramount here, or is it some number we can assign to the students and how they compare with other students in the state and across the country?
Well, as I said before, the devil lies in the details. The answer to your question is it's both. The PARA Act requires that it, or stipulates that at least 50% of a teacher's evaluation be based on the performance of their students. The other 50% then are the typical items that you see on a teacher performance evaluation. Their degree of planning, the way they run the classroom, their teaching methodology that they use, their interaction with students, et cetera, et cetera. It's a combination of these two things, and we don't know yet how or what measures of student achievement will be used to form that 50%. Mm-hmm. The Illinois State Board of Education currently has at least two advisory groups working on this. One is the Performance Evaluation Advisory Council, or committee, that's been in operation for some time, and they are working on the procedural details of PARA and putting this evaluation system into place. Now, there's another group working on a growth model that can be applied to both schools and perhaps to individual students. The idea being to somehow be able to measure academic growth in individual students and then use statistics to apply to be able to attribute a certain portion of that growth to the effect of an individual teacher. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a mouthful, and that's an extremely problematic and difficult aspect of this whole thing. And that's what's got that's what has created the most noise nationally in this whole discussion over the last couple of years, is how to do that effectively.
I have a caller here I want to get right to. Just one quick follow-up. Now then, will the same policy, the same evaluation procedure, will that be used in every school district in the state of Illinois?
Yes. The other difference is that, as I said, we've not had a statewide system before. This will be applied statewide. Mm.
We're talking this morning in this hour of Focus with Chris Rogge. He is Executive Director of the Council on Teacher Education. He is also Adjunct Assistant Professor in the College of Education here at U of I. All right, and we're talking about education reform here in the state and some of the features of a bill that was passed in the last session of the General Assembly and was signed by the governor in June, Senate Bill 7. And questions, comments are certainly welcome. We have one person here ready to go on a cell phone, so we'll get right to them on our line one. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an elementary school teacher, and it's. I'm glad that you immediately addressed one of the first things that came to my mind with this topic. As an elementary school teacher, several times I've seen how a good teacher gets loaded up with the students that provide a challenge to education. When I first got into teaching, my mentor was in the middle of what was an amazingly hectic year, because he essentially had six kids that were too difficult for most of the rest of the school to tackle. So he got loaded up with all of them. And he told me, he's like, you know, I'm glad I have a good background in this, because if I was a newer teacher, I may very well have left the profession after this first year. And the support's so difficult because in the last 3 years, with so many budget cuts coming up, classroom student assistants just keep getting cut one after another, or they get rotated out of the classroom where they're simply insufficient. I mean, there's plenty of times that students that have an IEP where they have a one-on-one assistant mandated to them to make their IEP, it's just simply not available. So to bring up here is I find it difficult to see the path to success for merit pay based on students with some kind of sliding algorithm, because like you said, doubling the details, the support network seems so frail in Illinois. I mean, 2 years ago, I think almost every single teacher's assistant I'm aware of was RIFT. So anyway, I'd just be very interested in your perspective on this. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Well, you touched on a number of things that that are worthy of comment. First of all, I was really happy to hear you say that as a young teacher, you had a mentor. I'm going to do a little commercial here, David. One of the other things I'm involved in at the University of Illinois is the Illinois New Teacher Collaborative. I currently serve as a director. That's a externally funded project that helps to provide a network of supports for new teachers in districts across the state. We're partnered with virtually every educational entity in the state of Illinois in this endeavor. We house it here at the U of I. And one of the real important aspects in all of this is that with new evaluation criteria going online, the new teachers, the veteran teachers, and the administrators all need supports. The questions that are being asked at every level right now are all dealing with the implementation of this new teacher evaluation system. It's mm-hmm. at the forefront of everybody's mind. Induction supports are vitally important for new teachers in any case, to get them from being a rookie, a novice teacher who is just trying to survive the classroom in those first few weeks, to get them up to speed to where they're performing like a more seasoned teacher. There are data out there that show that, you know, high quality induction supports can get a first or a second year teacher performing at the level of a third and fourth year teacher, and that has a tremendous effect on the students and student learning, which is the crux of this whole argument. So I digressed a little bit there, but I was happy to hear about the fact that you were working with a mentor. You also mentioned merit pay. Now, let's be clear, this act is not talking about merit pay. The main aspects of teacher evaluation that we're talking about here have to do with the probationary period, the acquisition of tenure or denial of tenure, and then the evaluation of teachers' performance once granted tenure and the possibility of dismissal of tenured teachers. Those are the main aspects where it's really not tangibly connected to the merit pay argument.
Let me ask you this. Here's a question of somebody who sent this in by email. Maybe you've touched on this, but I want to ask the question. The listener wonders, should new teachers be evaluated on the same criteria as veteran teachers, given the fact that, you know, they're going to both be have very different levels of experience?
Yeah, what does excellent mean when you're a freshly minted graduate of a teacher education program as opposed to a 10-year teaching veteran? Again, that's part of the specifics that are still being worked out. And I don't have a good answer to that other than the fact that, you know, the work we're doing with induction, there are professionals out in the state of Illinois who have worked out a continuum of teacher development. I'll do a little commercial for that. Taking skills of an emerging teacher based on the Illinois professional teaching standards, an instrument that helps to rate teachers based on four levels of their possession and demonstration of those specific skills that are indicated in the standards. Instruments like that are meant to follow a person from the beginning of their career all the way through mastery, if they achieve such a thing as mastery. Now, the kicker is that is not meant to be an accountability instrument. That's meant to be something that assists the teacher in developing their skills, identifying areas of strengths and weaknesses where they can develop their skills as they go along.
Some of the callers here. Let's go to Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Yes, hello. Mm-hmm. I would like your opinion on why should we and legislators and parents expect excellence in teaching when we're not willing to pay for it? Current teachers, many, get paid at a level of what's classified as the working poor. The nominally very best teachers, those who are nationally board certified, the state of Illinois is reneging on their promise of pay to them. So it comes back to maybe you get what you pay for, and to hold a higher level of product up as an indicator of whether a teacher is a good teacher or not. Maybe wishful thinking and quite misplaced if you're not willing to pay for that. And lastly, that becomes even more important at times such as this when the cost of education to become a teacher at both bachelor's and master's level is just increasing way, way out of sight. So I'd like your opinion on that.
Thank you very much, though. Those are good points. And you won't hear me arguing that teachers get paid too much, certainly. You also won't hear me ever question the dedication of all the good teachers who are out there in the classroom. Your point harks back to a point that the previous caller made about the lack of supports, and I neglected to comment on that at the time. That is true. We are in a bad fiscal climate, as you all know, and the funds to provide the kind of supports that teachers use and need to help them in the classroom aren't there to the degree they were. The induction programs that I mentioned in response to the last caller, the funding for what began as pilot programs several years ago out in school districts has been cut completely from the next budget. Our organization is working to try to keep induction services afloat in the state without that funding for specific programs. So that all goes to your point about a lack of funding for supports, a lack of incentive funding for National Board certification. It's not only more costly to become a teacher today, it's more difficult. Along with the initiatives that we're talking about today, there have also been moves to tighten up the requirements to become licensed as a teacher. It's harder to be accepted into a teacher education program now than it was even a year and a half ago. Some of the licensure testing has been beefed up. It's more costly. Not only the cost of tuition, but the required certification tests cost money. The various checks that have to be done cost money. This is all a part of the changing nature of schools and working in schools and teaching. And I'm not going to sit here and say that we should not have tough standards for teachers. And I'm not going to say that it shouldn't be difficult to become a teacher. But on the other side of that, as the caller points out, there's a lot of rhetoric about attracting the best and the brightest into teaching. And we do attract a number of very bright, very dedicated students. But attracting the best and brightest into any profession is dependent to some degree, at least, and I think to a large degree, on what the rewards are on the other end. We're competing for the same students who might aspire to careers in the sciences, in engineering, in law, in banking, in whatever. When teaching doesn't measure up to these other professions in terms of the rewards, it's hard to compete for that. If we're going to compete for the pool of the top X percent of students in any class, it's pretty tough competition based on the career prospect.
Well, here, I mean, the caller raises an excellent point, and you, I'm sure if it was up to you, average teacher pay would be higher. But when you look at all of the things that you have talked about, the fact that education is more rigorous and expensive, and there are fewer jobs, and there's less job security, and salaries are not particularly great, and in the future benefits will probably be less generous, I think the question you keep coming back to is, how do you attract people to the profession? And do you rely on virtue being its own reward to be something that will recruit adequate numbers of teachers?
Well, you know, we've depended on that for a long time. That's typically, you know, we expect people to enter the teaching profession out of sort of a missionary zeal and caring for students, and that's not adequate anymore. That sounds sort of harsh to say, but we need people who are not only dedicated to their students, and I've met very few teachers in all the years that I've been in education who weren't, and those people didn't last very long in the profession. But with this emphasis on student achievement, real student achievement, measured properly, not just measured by standardized tests, this requires someone who is very skilled, who possesses a deep knowledge of their subject area, who possesses the requisite skills to teach that subject to others, to communicate with children of various ages, to assess the needs of each individual learner in their classroom. Now, I can't emphasize that too much. The new teaching standards that will be implemented in 2013 are very explicit about what we insiders call differentiated instruction, which means the ability to assess the needs of every individual student, to adjust one's instruction to meet those needs, to assess the results of that, and to adjust again on the fly to do to optimize the learning of every individual student.
I want to thank the caller. I hope you'll forgive me. We're almost at our midpoint here. I have another caller who's been waiting patiently, and I want to go on to Champaign County. This is line two. Hello.
Hi, thank you. I'm afraid I can't restrain myself from making a comment about higher ed. I was wondering if you might be less guarded, more speculative, and even more critical if you had tenure. But I have the same qualifications to common education that Arne Duncan has, i.e. my mother was a teacher. And the language, corporate turnaround schools language that Arne Duncan brought to the Chicago school system elicited an immense response. And I was wanting to comment on the way you say that the teachers union in Chicago backed away from this agreement. Well, that's really not the way I understood it. There was a massive fight to get a less compliant union in, and it was mainly sponsored by a group called CORE, CoreTeachers.org, or Caucus of Rank and File Educators, as you can find on the web. But the point I'm trying to make is that the teachers felt entirely betrayed because they put a massive effort into moving away from the No Child Left Behind Arne Duncan School of Education Reform, and it's just not fair to say that everybody's on board. It's going to continue the massive fight that's going on about it. We have examples from around the country of what trying to assess and using tests and other things to evaluate teachers through the product of their students is, and what we've got is massive scandals of fabrication, teaching down, teaching to the test, a great enthusiast for education reform, quote-unquote, No Child Left Behind, has been on the show, Diane Ravitch, and I don't agree with everything she says, but she's entirely skeptical of what she was espousing in the past and thinks it's pernicious. I think she calls it the end of higher education. I mean, the guest probably knows the name of the book better than I. But so I wanted you to react to that, if you would.
Well, Diane Ravitch has commented extensively and written extensively in recent years about the reversal of her earlier position and her rejection of these, what she calls, market-based approaches to education reform. It's interesting, too, that the very term education reform has sort of been co-opted by those on one side of the policy aisle to essentially mean, you know, anything that's not the status quo. Essentially, many of the market-driven approaches that some reformers espouse, those of us who do represent the status quo, and I guess I have to count myself among those of us who work in higher education and teacher education, teachers themselves, teachers' unions, state education agencies, licensing boards, we are all now part of the education establishment. We're sort of the other side, if I may use that term, lumps us all together now and paints us as impediments to meaningful reform in education. One thing in response to what you said, the notion of tying teacher evaluation to student achievement, I can't state this emphatically enough, is the single most problematic part of this entire enterprise. If it's done by trying to attach teacher performance to students' scores on standardized achievement tests, such as in the No Child Left Behind model, it will not succeed. The teams that are working on putting together the growth model for Illinois are, and it would be good to speak to somebody who's working intimately in that arena. I know they are working diligently to come up with a system that is not limited to achievement scores, but takes a broader slice of a student's performance The specifics of how they are doing that, though, I have to say, I am not familiar with yet at this point. Don't know how far along they are in the process.
This morning, this hour focus, we're talking with Chris Rogge. We're talking about education reform here in the state of Illinois. We'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
WILL programs are made possible by Amber Glenn Alzheimer's Special Care Center in Urbana. Amber Glenn incorporates residents' past routines and interests into their daily lives, engaging residents in choices and daily living patterns. More information is available at 384-0100.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon, and we have 10 different topics every week. The second hour today, we had to make a little change. We couldn't do the show that we had scheduled. We'll do that another day. Instead, we'll go to the archives for a program from May, a conversation that I had with author Jason Stearns about his book, Dancing in the Glory of Monsters. It's about the long history of the war in the Congo. Then tomorrow morning at 10, we will talk with Christian Parenti. He's contributing editor at The Nation, and we will talk about his book, Tropic of Chaos. It's about climate change and the fact that in so many places around the world, particularly in around the equator, where there are a lot of countries that are struggling, climate change and its effects have caused a lot of political chaos. That's the subject of the book, and that's what we'll talk about tomorrow morning at 10. We're here weekday mornings, 10 to noon. Go to our website to look at the schedule, listen to past shows, will.illinois.edu. In this hour of Focus, our guest is Chris Rogge. He's Executive Director of the Council on Teacher Education. He's an Adjunct Assistant Professor of Education Policy here at the U of I. He's also Director of the Illinois New Teacher Collaborative. We're talking about the education reform package that was signed into law by the governor back in June and trying at least to get a handle on what it means for teachers in the state of Illinois. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. I want to move on here to another area, at least for a couple of minutes, and then we'll get some more calls. I mentioned at the beginning of the program that if you read about this legislation, one of the things, again, that's up in the headlines is, well, somehow this will make it easier to get rid of bad teachers. And I want to cut right to the basic question here. Well, how many bad teachers are there in the state of Illinois? I mean, is there a way to answer? I mean, do we have a lot of people?
I respectfully decline to attempt that.
Yeah, take the fifth on that. Does anybody think that in the classrooms of this state there are significant numbers of people who simply shouldn't be there?
Well, what you hear often is that people in any given community will decry the sad state of public education. And most people believe that, in general, schools are bad and some teachers are bad, but not in the school that my child attends. That's a commonly held opinion. Most parents think their children's teachers are good. Teaching is like any other profession. You have those who are excellent and those who are, let's say, average, and everything in between. I'm a little bit alarmed, I guess, sometimes at the teaching profession being held feet to the fire, I think, a little bit more stridently than other professions. Now, granted, it's the most important job there is. I would argue that with anybody. There are bad teachers in the state of Illinois. It's not pervasive. It's not an epidemic. But I'm not going to tell you that there are no bad teachers in Illinois. Highlighting this bill as a means to get rid of bad teachers masks the true intent of the bill. The intent of this whole issue is to do a better job of systematically evaluating the performance of teachers. Now, if we lay aside the issue of student achievement and incorporating that in, being more uniform and more systematic about how teacher performance is evaluated and how tenure decisions will be made then based on those evaluations, and how dismissal decisions will be made based on those evaluations across the state does lend more clarity to the whole picture of teacher evaluation. This system is also intended to help teachers improve their performance. Part of the idea of this, and you don't see this in print very much, but if it's done right, if the system is put together properly, then teachers in their first 4 years, their probationary years, who have not yet achieved tenure, this system should help them to identify the parts of their performance that they need to improve and help mm-hmm. them to hone in on and hopefully improve those things. So it's not just about getting rid of teachers. I think that's vastly overblown.
Okay. We have I have an email. I have some other callers, so we'll go next to Piatone, line 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Well, you know, the school system, I've got an opinion about this, you know, and I want to kind of curious to see what you guys think. I deal with a lot of the local one. I used to live down there, and my property taxes are far less than they are up here. And I'm in a smaller town. The quality teaching seems to be in the toilet, but yet we pay more every year, and it's always the money bucket. Their idea is, well, we need more money every year. I do the research and find out, well, every time they scream about, well, we don't have computers, we don't have this, we don't have that, it doesn't go into the money. The money doesn't go into what they're talking about. The money has gone into teaching. It's gone into the teachers themselves. And I think this is a big problem. I think a lot of people resent the fact that the unions get what they want all the time. And why is it that the big cities like Chicago or Detroit or Los Angeles or, you know, any place that some of these bigwigs have been, it seems like they're the worst places to be, and yet they ask for more money? I mean, I don't understand it. Is it because of the lack of quality teachers, or is it the way the system is set up that they don't get the fair share? I honestly think the system needs to be revamped. I think the public schools stink. Thank God I put my kids through a private school, because I know so many people that had their kids go through public schools and it was so much worse.
Well, there's a lot on the table. You want to pick among some of that to try to respond to.
Well, I guess the first thing I would ask is, on what basis do you make the judgment that quality teaching is in the toilet in your local school district? That's a pretty broad statement. Schools have problems. The issue of the large city school districts, because they're population centers, they get most of the media attention. Most of the media attention when we talk about schools in Illinois is focused on the Chicago public school system, because it's a population center, because there are higher concentrations of students who live in poverty in inner city areas, and there is a direct correlation between factors associated with living in poverty and learning and achievement. And that's the 800-pound gorilla in the corner of the room that no one wants to tackle. Policymakers don't want to tackle that. Politicians do not want to tackle that. If I get on my soapbox a little bit, I apologize. It's much easier to blame teachers. It's much easier to say that our schools are failing because we don't have quality teachers. And as I said before, I don't claim that every teacher in every school in Illinois is an excellent teacher. However, to say that our schools are terrible without taking into account all of the very complex factors that enter into that interaction between teachers and students on a daily basis. Think about the single interaction between one teacher and one student and how complex that is. Now, multiply that times X in a single classroom. In the case of a high school teacher with 5, 6, 7 different classrooms full of students during the course of a day, it's a tremendously complex undertaking. Each one of those kids brings with them whatever background and or baggage that comes into the to their lives. So, you know, to lay it all at the and I'm not trying to minimize the importance of quality teaching. And I don't think there's anybody who works in teacher education who would argue that a quality teacher is not important. That's the business we are in. But that's an oversimplification, I think.
We have about 10 minutes left. Let me introduce again our guest, Chris Rogge. He's Executive Director of the Council on Teacher Education. He is Adjunct Assistant Professor of Education Policy Organization Leadership at the U of I and the College of Education. He is also Director of the Illinois New Teacher Collaborative. And we're talking about the education reform package that passed through the Illinois General Assembly this last session and was signed by the governor in mid-June. Here's an email from someone. Actually, they're out listening in Iowa this morning. The listener writes, I retired in 2000 after having worked primarily in Illinois schools as a counselor and teacher for 37 years. During that time, I saw a great variety of educational reform efforts imposed by the state of Illinois. My opinion is that these reform efforts were a failure and did little except make teachers cynical and distract them from what they were trying to do. If the above is true, the question is this: why doesn't the state and federal government just keep their noses out of the work of local schools and leave this up to local communities to assess their schools? Anyone with any sense knows the failure of communities has caused the failure of schools. If we don't know how to educate by now, then we're never going to learn to do so.
I can't find much to disagree with is there really,
you know, we talk about schools being locally governed, locally run institutions. We have local elected boards, and they choose their superintendents. But then also there are certain mandates that are imposed by the state, and we are now talking about the need. Some people are talking about the need for educational standards that would apply across the country.
Right.
So is it a problem that somehow mandates – what have you, are imposed either from Springfield or from Washington?
It can be, okay? The issue is equity. The reason that state and or federal mandates exist is the effort to provide equitable educational opportunities to all kids, regardless of the community in which they live. The last figures I saw, Illinois was second from the bottom in the list of 50 states in terms of the gap between the per pupil spending in our richest districts and our poorest districts. Mm-hmm. So it's an equity issue. The reason some of these well-intentioned reforms work, some of them don't work. I was a teacher for a number of years early in my career. As you would expect, my wife is a teacher and has been for 35 years. I've worked with teachers my entire career. There is a certain mindset that can creep into a teacher's brain that says, if I put my head down and wait this out, then this reform will go away and the next one will come along. This is different. This has been written into law. It will be the law. It is the law of the state of Illinois that we are going to evaluate teachers differently. So this one's not going away, and I know that teachers feel put upon, and I think the No Child Left Behind / testing agenda that's been imposed over the last several years has made teachers tired and has made them feel like their skills, their knowledge, their abilities aren't being utilized or allowed to be utilized to their full potential.
All right. We have another caller here, about 5-6 minutes left in this hour of focus. We'll go to line one, Champagne. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Great show. I am a teacher's assistant in a local district, K-5. I agree with everything you said, and I think a lot of what needs to happen is memmy busting. There are a lot of appeals to emotion, which we have even heard on the show, that are not based in fact but are based on appeals to emotion when it comes to education. So I had two points I wanted to make, and the first is to bust a memmy. and that is that teachers' unions keep bad teachers from being hired. Okay, I have a very good contract, one of the strongest contracts in a local school district. I am not in the teachers' union, though. However, there are almost no contracts that do not have provision for putting teachers on remedial plans, for warning them that their behavior is inappropriate, and these things do happen. So that's a big memmy I want to bust. There is nothing in the union contract that says you can't fire a teacher. So if a bad teacher is not being fired, it is the fault of the assistant principal, the superintendent, and the school board. And that's one point I'm very strong on. How do you feel about unions and their power?
Unions exist for the good of their clientele, which is teachers. Now, the teachers' unions are a bit different than others in that their end client, if you allow me to use that language, is the student, as much as the student is the end client of the teacher. So their perspective has to be a bit broader. In my job with the New Teacher Collaborative, I have worked with state-level folks from both of the teachers' unions, and yes, the welfare of their constituency is first and foremost in their mind, but the overall quality, I've found anyway, that they are very, very concerned with the overall quality of education for Illinois students.
Sure. And then the second issue, and I think you nailed it on the head, especially here in Illinois, is equity. Unit 7, which is the school district just south of here, predominantly rural and small towns, up until recent years could not even generate enough revenue to fix the roofs on its buildings. It was literally that bad, and that's true of most of the rural school districts in this county, which is a prosperous county. But we have up in the collar counties, Maine South, Evanston, other places where because of the property tax distribution, they get approximately, $25,000 per student, which is like 10 times what we do in this county, which is a huge issue. And people don't understand how that impacts the schools. As someone who is in kindergarten and through five on a regular basis, when you have a student who has never been in a structured daycare, much less a preschool, they are already a year behind compared to students who can, they're not even pre-readers. They're readers. They already know their numbers. They know how to count to 100 compared to a student whose conflict resolution skills are shoving. And the thing that I would like to get out there for most people to understand is the main skill a teacher needs, actually, is classroom management. That seems to be where, when I see teachers who are effective and teachers who are not effective, and I work with probably 50 different teachers, and most of them are very effective. It always comes down to classroom management. But when people talk about, oh, teachers need this and teachers need that, they don't understand that skill. And so I want to thank you for all you're doing, and it's been a great show.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. I don't know if there's anything you want to add to that.
Well, thank you for the call. Classroom management always is at the top of the list when you talk about education and success as a teacher. It's an essential survival skill. It is one of a vast and complex set of skills and abilities that a teacher needs.
We're very short on time. We have like about a minute and a half or 2 minutes. Just real quickly, it's very clear that people in Chicago were very concerned about trying to head off a potential strike. Mm-hmm. There hadn't been a strike in Chicago in a long time, and the worry was that there would be one. Could well be one next year. And there's a provision in this that applies specifically to Chicago, and I think only to Chicago, making it more difficult for teachers to be able to strike. Overall, though, does this make it more difficult for teachers to strike or for them to negotiate over pay, benefits, working conditions?
I think it forces a little bit of extra time into the process. In Chicago, for example, it established that, when you reach an impasse, then the last and best offers of both sides have to be made public, and there's an opportunity for comment, and then a panel is appointed to review the proposals on both sides. So it's building in time, it's building in transparency, And then I think the third provision of that was that a strike vote had to be approved by 75% of the membership in order to actually strike. So, of course, I think an underlying intent was to try to head off a strike, if at all possible, and in doing so, to get all parties to carefully look at what's on the table and both sides, make it available to the public. And if you make it available to the public, of course, that's you assume there will be increased pressure then to settle.
Mm-hmm. Overall, I think people in education, a lot of people in education really would say that they felt this was the best they could do and things could have been worse. They're trying to, I think, put a positive face on it, but I think a lot of people would say, well, you know, we were not in the strongest position, and so we did the best we could.
Yeah, I think that's the basis of this. You know, multiple stakeholders, everybody was in on the process. There was a lot of collaboration. What that means is that nobody got exactly what they wanted, but there was enough agreement that they were able to come up with something.
Okay. Well, is this on balance, how do teachers come out of this?
I think teachers come out okay on balance. I think having more specificity and uniformity in the evaluation process, for a teacher to know exactly what they're being evaluated on and to have that down in writing, I think that's a strength because it removes a little bit of the mystery and the uncertainty that may have been present in the older style evaluations.
Well, there we're going to have to leave it. I'm sure in the future we'll talk some more about these issues with other guests, other days. We do, however, want to say thanks very much to our guest, Chris Rogge. He's Executive Director of the Council on Teacher Education. He's Adjunct Assistant Professor at the College of Education here at the U of I. He's also Director of the Illinois New Teacher Collaborative. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, David. My pleasure.